Hi, welcome to Odd Leaf Stories. I'm your host, Cree Crawford, and I'd like to introduce you to our producer, Braven Stone. Braven, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Braven will be our tour guide as we embark upon these many journeys.
It's a dangerous job, but someone's got to do it.
Yes, Braven, and you're the right guy for the job. I think we found the right person.
Thank you. Perfect.
Braven's going to keep me on track. As much as he can.
I have a shock collar.
Yes.
Hold on.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's been known to happen. It will probably happen. It'll keep things entertaining.
And a little spritz bottle if he gets on the table.
He spritz me, there's going to be a problem. But how do you like the studio? Well, I have to tell everybody this. I'm so proud of Braven. Braven built this whole studio from scratch. And I'm so proud of him.
Thank you. It's incredible.
It's very, feels great to be here. It's very professional. We'll have a number of interns who will be lucky enough to join Braven in this journey. Braven's been interviewing
them. Call me if you want to intern.
Yeah. We'll give out the, what's the email address? info@oddleafstories.com. Or is it producer at? What do we have?
It's info.
info@oddleafstories. Also, if you've got an Odd Leaf story of your own that's interesting, reach out and we'd love to...
www.oddleafstories.com. Check us out. Or you can see www.oddleafmedia.com and get more information about us and other stuff we're doing there.
Absolutely. Today, we're going to be interviewing a good friend of ours, Dave Daly. He's the CEO and founder of Grav Labs. And Grav is one of the most iconic functional glass companies in the industry. And Dave's been embarked on a 20-year story. I think you're going to find it really incredible. He'll touch upon all aspects of how he got started, the challenges he's faced, and sort of the turning points throughout his history as the CEO of this company. CBDLA.
There we go. CBDA.
CBG. CBGA.
My fiance and I, you know, engaged to be married now.
I've heard rumors of this.
We have an inside joke that you go to all these CBD shows and you just show up and go, excuse me, what is CBDA?
CBDA?
Because everybody's clueless, right? That's why it's funny.
And they're like, because they're like, what's CBDA? Wait, they don't get
CBDA?
It. They're slow. They're slower on the uptake. Or THC. Taha. That sounds Klingon. Oh, yeah, I'm a nerd. I do like Star Trek. Okay.
Right. And gentlemen.
Okay. Hi, this is Cree Crawford, and I'm your host for Odd Leaf Stories. And today, on our inaugural launch of our podcast, our audio and video podcast, I have a very, very special guest and a person I can call a friend, Dave Daly, the founder and CEO of Grav Labs, probably the most formidable functional glass companies in the cannabis industry. So with that, David, I got to shake your hand and say thank you so much for making it, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, are you kidding me? This
really
is great.
Excited for you guys.
Yeah, this is incredible. This is incredible. So I have to share with everybody, Dave's actually a neighbor of ours out here. It's pretty incredible. I guess great companies are gravitating to each other. I just made that. That was horrible.
Very
anyway.
Nice.
Yeah. But David, share with us, first of all, I want to know, where did you come up with the name, and then I also want to, you know, get your history, and I'll chime in.
The official name of the company is Gravitron LLC. Okay. So, with the name story kind of is, you know, maybe not that exciting of a story, but when I was in college in '98, really dates me.
You're young.
we would make these gravity bongs that we'd be spraying. And I was always the guy that was making them, right? Like we'd go above and beyond. We'd make it. We'd take a Jim Beam bottle and we'd score it around the edges, and then we'd get suited up and put it into boiling hot water and then ice cold water, and it popped the thing, and then we'd put duct tape on the bottom of it and find a bucket, and then we take the screw cap, and instead of just putting foil on it, we got a one hitter and shove that in there. So we're making this sophisticated gravity bong, and
the MacGyver
and it was around year 2000. So in the Gravitron, that circus ride
right.
was a thing, and it dates me even further, and And I think that they called it the Gravitron 2K, right? And so, like, we would refer to this gravity bong as the Gravitron 2K. And so when, cool. You know, flash forward to 2003, when I started the company, it was 2004-ish on that right around then, that was another story. I was like, well, what am I going to call a company? I was like, we'll call it Gravitron, right? So that was the, you know, and there was, you know, when it comes to trademarking, which is a whole other conversation, you know, you want to be able to have a unique name that doesn't mean anything, so it's not, you know, so you don't have a, otherwise the USPTO will reject right. your mark.
Right.
So Gravitron was a really easy one. You know, although there are other products called Gravitron, there just can't be legitimate consumer confusion
okay.
around the name. So it was a great trademarkable name, and unfortunately, I never got Gravitron.com. But you know, flash forward a few more years, there was a company I really admired called Amsterdam Design Studios, and this guy Brian, who you know, still really admire, and I loved the angle of like a design studio or a lab of sorts. And so Gary Canning from 420 Science was our designer at the time, and I was like, Gary, I really want to do something that's like Gravitron Labs or Gravitron Studios, and so he kind of said, well, how about Grav Labs? And so that was like 08 was born Grav Labs. Flash forward a few more years, and I was trying to find better domains, and mm-hmm. grav.com was parked, and or it wasn't parked, it was being used by like a consultant out of mm-hmm. Minnesota or something. Mm-hmm. And so I negotiated to buy the domain in 2012 for $12,000. And so got grav.com in 2012. Didn't launch e-commerce until October of 2017. So like we never actually sold to end users until then, and really held out in an attempt to really service our retailers better, but you know, more so because I'm a child of the Tommy Chong debacle, right? Tommy Chong gate, where you know, Operation Pipe Dreams, you know, all of these online head shops get shut down,
right?
And so I was always scared to sell online. You know, it was a lot of exposure, unnecessary exposure. So yeah, it took us until 2017 to bite the bullet and do something risky to start selling directly to end users.
That's awesome. Hey, producer Brayman, could you pull up his website?
I can
behind us?
Indeed.
We've got good tech.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a good website.
It's good stuff.
It works. So, you can actually click on stuff and buy it.
Yeah.
What?
So initially you were B2B. You were selling to head shops or how did...
Well, initially I was just selling a gravity bong, right? Okay. Like I came to Mark, I was like, I'm going to boil the ocean with an all glass gravity bong, right? No one's ever done it that made an affordable one. There was a...
Explain the design so some people understand what a gravity bong is.
So a gravity bong is, you know, a lot of other countries call it a bucket bong. It's a... the concept is that it's a vacuum chamber, right?
Okay.
So you take a bucket, or in our case, a small cylinder vase, and you drop a bottle inside of it. The bottle has the bottom cut off of it.
Okay.
Traditionally, these are done in bathtubs or sinks with a
fraternities and
sororities. Yeah, exactly. With a Coke bottle, you cut the bottom off the Coke bottle, and then you take the screw cap, you know, cut a hole in the top of that,
okay.
put some foil in the top of it, poke some holes, and then you know, drop the bottle in up to you know as high as you want the water to be. Light it as you lift it up out of the water, and all of the smoke gets trapped inside the chamber. You unscrew the top, put your mouth over it, push down, and you know, shoots everything back.
Yeah.
I mean, still to this day, it is the most efficient way to smoke cannabis, right? Like, absolutely, you don't lose a drop, right? Like, you know, and this is something my dad always tells me. He's like, man, you know, you really ought to push the Gravitron more. It's the most efficient thing. It's the best way to get the most smoke out of your smoke. And
you're like, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, no, he's like, and I actually thought that I was going to boil the ocean with a gravity bong. Everybody was going to smoke out of a gravity bong. And I did that. I banged my head against the wall for 3 years,
uh-huh.
learning how to, you know, blow the glass components myself, cut every bottle myself, you know, made every phone call.
Hands on.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was like me and you know a couple of people, but like I was literally making every single Gravitron for the first 3 years of my existence.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the harder part was learning how to, you know, the downstem and the bowl. So what we did was redesigned it to, you know, to be a more presentable, you know, go-to-market product,
mm-hmm.
right? Which seems really easy, but this is like this was my crash course, my MBA in design, right?
Okay.
And or master's in design, and you know, getting an MBA along the way, right? Yeah. Like, you know, learning all the business behind it as well. Yeah. But the you know, the design process was like, okay, I want to make an all glass gravity bomb. Go, right?
Okay.
You know, you look at it today. You can get the Gravitron up there, right there.
The classic. Look at that.
Oh, that doesn't work that well, does it?
He might have clicked the wrong one.
Anyways, the Gravitron.
Wow, look at all these though.
Oh yeah, these are some of the artists.
This has been updated in the last few months too, right? I mean, I looked at it around Christmas time. This is cool.
You gotta go up there and click the keyword and just hit Gravitron. Itron, Gravitron.
G-R-A-V-A-I. Oh, sorry.
Let the professional tell me.
Yeah, it's a medium bottle, that one.
I'm just facilitating.
There we go.
Oh, that's just a part.
Placement bottle. Let's see.
Oh, look at that. Wow.
Okay. Right there.
Like the medium.
Look at that.
Different
wow,
sizes.
That's pretty.
Holy Man. Cow. So, okay, I got it. So there's a glass. That's incredible.
Look, and it's sold out. That's embarrassing.
Well, that's a good thing.
I was
going to
order one
doing
on,
well.
On
camera. Right, right. Yeah, well,
that's good.
Tell that to the people who want to buy it.
It's kind of cool. It looks like a liquor bottle. So, I mean, for those people who don't want people to, like,
you put this
know
so
that they're a did you design it like that?
So that's a great segue to the story, right? Okay. Like, so, you know, the exercise in, like, how do you design an all-glass gravity bong that's affordable, right? You know, the goal is to get it to market for $50. You know, costs have gone up. But the first step of it was like, okay, well, let's figure out how to cut a bottle efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, where do you go? You know nothing, right?
Right.
Imagine
right.
you know There's nothing. Right. How do you cut the bottom off of a bottle?
I know nothing about cutting
right.
the bottom
off. Right. So, you know, you go to, you know, a local glass shop, right? Like, mm-hmm. okay, how do you cut the glass shop? It's like one of these glass makers, right?
Okay.
You know, Benzwanger's is exactly where I went in Houston.
Right. Okay.
I'm like, hey, you know, this it's Mother's around Mother's Day, and like, hey, I want to make a vase for my mom. I want to cut the bottom off this bottle. I couldn't tell him I'm making a bong, right?
Right.
Just 23-year-old kid, making, I want to cut the bottle. So the guy's like, well, there's no good way to do it. You got to score on the outside, tap out the score from the inside, and I'm like, yeah, it's not gonna work. Is there a better way?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, well, you could use a glass cutting saw. We've got this little Makita in the back, and you know, but you'd have to like rotate it. I'm like, yeah, let's see what that's like. And so I go back there, bust out my flip phone, turn it on to video, and the guy's like, you know, one guy's holding it, the other guy's cutting it. They do three rotations, bottom pops off.
No
I'm
fingers
like,
lost.
You know, they take the polishing tool, they polish the bottom of it, and give it to me, and go, yeah, good luck, kid. And so take that flip, you know, that video home, look at the Makita model, go buy the Makita saw the next day. And I'm like, all right, I'm off to the races. Well, what kind of bottle do you use?
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Sam's Boat on Richmond in Houston.
Okay.
And I go to their dumpster and literally get into the dumpster and find like the most cylindrical bottle that I could find. Cause I didn't want it to be, you know, have a handle or whatever. And, you know, I found this Seagram's bottle.
Uh-huh.
And so I grab a few of those, and I, you know, start cutting bottles, and you know, and I didn't worry about what I was going to put it in, because I was like, yeah, I'll just find a plastic bucket. There's got to be available bucket,
right? Or a vase or something.
Yeah, and it was all, you know, everything's going green at this point in the world. I'm like, I'm going to use recycled bottles. It's going to be super green company, and. And by the way, if this is getting on too much of a tangent, let me know. But
no,
like,
this,
you know, this is down and dirty details of making the Gravitron.
I love this.
So the
history,
right? So the so I go to I get these the bottoms cut off, and now I'm like, well, what do I put in the top to, you know, to use as a bowl?
Right.
So I go to the BC Smoke Shop. George, the owner, is like, you know, behind the counter, I tell him what I'm doing. He's like, well, when you buy this, you know, so let's see if we have some downstems in the back that would fit the bottom, you know, the top of the neck of the bottle.
And
then, you know, with a gasket in it, and then we can put a bowl into the downstem.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, amazingly enough, a 12 by 1 millimeter downstem and a 9 millimeter bowl, which was kind of very common around the time when people were still just making bongs. Like Roar was not doing a ton of the glass on glass ground joints. I mean, it started, but the, you know, there was a lot of their product were still downstems that with grommets. So So there was a large availability of these parts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I was buying them at retail.
Right.
So I couldn't very well sell this.
Yeah, and but, make
you
money.
Know, proof of concept, though. I'm going to the store and I'm just buying these things at retail so I can actually see if it's effective and it works the right way. Because, you know, most people are smoking these out of plastic bottles. You know, is glass really effective? Right? Because, you know, is there any sort
not
of
healthy
give
either
you need,
out
right?
of the plastic?
Well, you know, the plastic bottle's not touching. I mean, I think it's okay to use a glass bowl, but with a plastic bottle, you know, long story short, I'm trying to get something that's marketable,
right?
Something that looks good on the shelf.
Scalable
at a head shop.
And scalable. Yeah.
So, you know, I realized that the bowl and the downstem is the way to go. Put it into the neck of the bottle. But I still have these odd bottles. I'm fishing them out of dumpsters at liquor stores at bars. So they're all different.
Right.
So how do I get to a uniform bottle? Well, you know, I'm cutting these things at my parents' house in their garage. And
with the Makita.
With the Makita saw and a vise. And I... And so my mom's like, hey, you're very supportive parents. Thank you, mom and dad. My mom's like, hey, why don't you use this Kendall Jackson bottle of mine? And it was like, eureka. Wine bottles are all the same, right? And this is all condensed, right? This is all happening in a very short amount of time.
Right,
you know, but my
mom's
like...
It's a learning curve. You just
totally. You don't think
questions.
Like wine bottles. Okay, wine bottles are scalable. And
again,
all very
thank you, mom.
Right, exactly.
and so, Kendall Jackson.
you know, and I'd been brainstorming about how to, you know, what the bucket is. And when the wine bottle thing came to me, I was like, oh my God, like maybe this wine bottle will fit this cylinder vase that I found at Michael's.
Right.
And, sure enough, the wine bottle fits the cylinder vase. And now I'm off to the races. I can put a wine bottle inside of a vase and a downstem inside the neck of the bottle and a bowl inside the downstem. And I have
a product,
right?
Yeah.
Now, there are a whole lot of details that kind of go on from here. Like, how do you get the grommet on the bottom of the bottle to fit, right? Well, Home Depot's bound to sell a grommet that fits that, right? So I'm going to Home Depot, I'm going to Lowe's, I'm going to all of these. You know, maybe Builder Square was still around at the time.
Uh-huh.
Remember Builder Square?
Yeah.
So I can't find one, right? Like, it doesn't exist. And making a mold is going to cause, you know, making a mold and making my own part for it is also not really an option because I'm still fishing these things out of dumpsters. I'm going to recycling facilities and I'm finding bottles, you know, wine bottles now.
Right.
And so all of the bottoms are relatively different, very small variations. Well, if you're going to go to a mold, you have to be, to be perfect.
Right.
So I end up using this product called Plasti Dip. It's a way to re-grip tool handles.
Yeah.
And so I'm dipping these things.
Is that the guy in the boat that you can also, the guy doesn't sink if you spray it in the bottom of a boat?
Yes, exactly. It's also, exactly. So, you know, it's just like tar, right?
Yeah.
And waterproof, which is nice because you're sticking in water. So, super labor intensive. I like built these racks to be able to do this. I would pour the Plasti Dip out into these into vessels, across a table, and then I would dip each bottle, like rotate it around, dipping each bottle in Plasti Dip 4 times over again, so I could get a thickness. Grommet around the bottom of it.
Right.
And it was a huge cost of goods too, right? Like each of these bottles was $7.50 and I could basically get plastic on that for about 20 bottles.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, adding a lot of cost.
Right. And time.
Meanwhile I'm like, okay, well my cost of goods here is it's like $10 and I'm selling them for $20 wholesale and I'm doing my math and I'm like, I'm gonna be rich. And, you know,
my money.
Right, exactly. And so you don't realize, you don't take into account, it's so easy to like just go into business, but you don't take into account all of the other business expenses, your rent, your employees, your trade show expenses, your advertising expenses, your cost
everything.
Of, you know, your ERP, everything adds up. So
I'm going to be sort of rich.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. And this is where I can kind of flash forward a little bit to, you know, give you the more broader scope of the business journey, which was that, I learned how to do all these things as I was going, but all the while I was taking out, I was building up a lot of credit card debt because I was buying, it wasn't enough margin to be able to finance the growth. So I was, taking out credit cards, taking out new credit cards to pay down the old credit cards. Come up for air in about 2007, and
small business loans from the government, probably not available to a bond company.
Yeah, no, I mean, Bank of America found out what I did and kicked me out. Right, like this is not.
Of course.
Even just selling bongs was just not okay. So,
You know, functional glass.
You know, 2007, I come up for air and I need to buy my next lot of bottles. And I'll never forget having to make this call to my dad. I was like, you know, sucked it up. I was like, I'm $85,000 in debt and I don't have enough money to buy my next run of bottles. And it was about this time, it was around like ACL Fest 2007 that I designed, I was going out trying to promote the Gravitron by making these one hitters because I was making all of the bowls myself. Uh-huh. So the bowl, the process of making a bowl, I built these machines that I, you know, I'd learned how to make, you know, how to blow glass on my own just out of necessity, just to make the downstem in the bowl.
Right.
And, you know, the way that I did that was I got to see a machine, a single-sided lathe that spins the material. You know, it's like a motor and a sheave and, you know, and a pulley system that, you know, that's attached to a dowel that has a chuck on it. Mm-hmm. And so you pre-crack all of your material, you know, chuck it up, and then you have a torch, grab the torch, you know, the material kind of collapses on itself, you've got a graphite rod, and you anneal it as
this
you go.
This is intro to glass making. Glass.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's I mean, I wow. would love to take it out of the abstract. We can run down to the shop and show you exactly what I do.
We
but the process is not dissimilar to making a one-hitter. And okay. So I was like, well, I'll make these one-hitters off the same material that I'm making the bowl off of, but no one's going to buy them. It's just a clear one-hitter with my logo on it. Well, that that ACL Fest, I ran into one of my accounts, and okay. I was like handing these things out. And he was like, dude, these are awesome.
Yeah.
Do you sell these? I was like, no one would buy these. Come and see me.
That's the one with the little nib on it, so you know
exactly.
The end.
Yeah, exactly. So
Those are really great products.
Yep.
All right, guys, real quick, we're going to take a break from the interview, and we're going to do a quick ad read about our sponsor, Ionization Labs. So, Cree, take it away.
Yeah, thank you. Ionization Labs is the sponsor of Odd Leaf Stories, and it's allowing us to gather all this incredible information and interviews. Ionization Labs has a product called CanID. CanID is a full-service turnkey potency testing solution that can be utilized in-house by cultivators and extractors producers around the world. Please look at www.ionizationlabs.com and really take control of your data analysis in-house. So the one hit at ACL.
So one hit at ACL, I was actually, you know, I'd like to take it back a few months to where the idea of the taster came from, which we, you know.
The taster, okay.
Yeah, we actually trademarked the word taster. We have the trademark on the word taster for one hitter, coincidentally. And when I first went to, the idea spawned when I went to the High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam in 2006. So I went over November of 06. You know, I was like, I'm going to try to win the Cannabis Cup with the Gravitron, and of course, failed miserably. But the, you know, everybody's smoking after each other. They're literally going from booth to booth smoking out of bongs, right? One person after another. It's the most disgusting thing you've ever seen in your life. Right. So I was like, you know, there was just tasters right. to taste, because that's what you're doing. You're tasting all the weed, right?
So
I was like, oh, I'll make tasters. You know, I never did anything about it until the next ACL Fest when I was like, oh, I'm going to go out and hand out all of these one hitters. These tasters.
Was it more of just a marketing?
Totally marketing, right?
So it's a promo gift.
Oh yeah, I never thought I would sell a single one of them. And then I see the account there, and he's like, "Come and see me." So I was like, "Well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to make it presentable." And you know, I got this test tube rack of 50 of them, and you know, filled them out, put you know for tobacco use only all over the rack.
Different colors.
You know, that was an important part of the world that time. And then, you know, I bring him to him and he's like, you know, I mean, I make these things I'm making it myself, right? Like the material costs are next to nothing. You know, it's just my time, the torch time, et cetera. And I was like, he's like, how much do you want to charge me for them? And this was a really big moment for me because I had been, you know, basically still, you know, Gravitron's cost me $10.
Right.
Selling it for 20, I'm losing money hand over fist, and I'm like, well, how about $1.50? And the guy's like, listen, he's a manager of a store, not an owner,
okay.
And he's like, you can charge me $1.50 or $2.50, and I'm still gonna sell these things for $9. And I was like, well, then they're $2.50. And literally, like, it was off to the races from there. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, I've been underpricing a lot of my stuff because I'm assuming that I can just make everything myself.
Right.
And I'm not building in the overhead and the employees and all of the, you know, real business costs to be able to scale.
Right.
So, flash forward, to 2008, I'm now like 6 months later after launching Tasters, I was completely out of debt. I had bought three more glass blowing lathes. I had hired four glass blowers and I had designed 10 other products that we had brought to market. It was a eureka moment to me to think like, oh man, you know, even though like I wanted to boil the ocean with this Gravitron, the stores that I've been selling to knew me as Dave the Gravitron guy and they were willing to take chances on other products that I was selling. So when I called them and said, hey, I've got this bubbler I want to sell you. Hey, I've got this bong I want to sell you. I've got this, you know, steamroller I want to sell you.
They were
like,
oh
yeah, absolutely. I've got a product line, right?
So, that's great.
And I realized that, you know, just by, you know, all the tinkering that I had done in all of those like, you know, early years had led me to being, you know, to understanding the manufacturing process and being able to design things that were the kind of the lowest common denominator. I wanted to make things that were really highly efficient but low cost. That was always my initiative.
Mm-hmm. And you built a reputation through that whole learning curve with everybody, and reputation in this industry means so much. And so you could call upon that.
Yeah, but reputation is really just—it's hard, right? Like we deal with reputation stuff all the time. But you know, the thing that really kind of like makes a lasting company is just showing up every day, right? Like as long you're never judged on doing things right. You're judged on how well you fix the things that go wrong.
So I have a question.
There's always going to be something. Yeah.
If your credo is the efficient low cost model.
Yep.
As we were researching for the episode, we came across the $950 bong as shown. You can look at the screen. And $1,400 weed grinder that they're selling at Barney's. What is your take on the luxury end of it?
Oh, I mean, there's definitely a place for luxury. I can't remember what the artist is that did that.
The hand blown stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would have to speak to the specific artist. I mean, this, you know, in today's day and age, a $950 bong is not a big deal.
I've seen like, functional, you know, these art are that like $400,000 one-off pieces that are, I mean, just artists.
All the resident glass blowers at Grav are like selling $950, $1,000 bongs every day.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I mean the luxury or you know bespoke market is a really powerful one, right? I mean, it's something that I support myself, and I think you know it's it'll always be there, right? Like I look at cannabis consumption devices in not a dissimilar way to furniture, right? Like it's a lifestyle and you know, the people that use them interact with them in a really meaningful way, and they're really proud of the objects that they consume cannabis out of. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to a certain extent, we service that same user, but I like to think that we service that customer at an earlier stage in their cannabis consumption journey, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they get into a Grav pipe that's, you know, a lowest common denominator pipe that's, you know, cheap and functional, and they realize that like, oh man, I do really love these objects, and I'm willing to invest in a more expensive product as I go along. We hope that people graduate out of Grav and into other things.
But you've got some really, can we go back to the site? You've got some really interesting products though. I mean, they're not all, it's not low cost meaning cheap or affordable. I mean, they're affordable, but there's some beautiful pieces in there. Some really interesting stuff. Besides, say, the taster, the one hitter, which really, it sounds like that was your turning point in the company.
Big
the product turning point, which is absolutely definable. What is your favorite product that you currently carry? It's like you have it like which is your favorite kid, right?
Right. I was gonna say pick your favorite child.
or you could say why. I mean, maybe you have different. There's different verticals.
Well, you know, of course, you know, we do this internally. We say, you know, I am a spoon, or I am a bong, or I am the. I'm the 32B. I'm the fire button. Like, you know, we want employees to kind of pick their favorite thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm always a Gravitron, of course. But
the baby.
It's like your firstborn. but, you know, I'd say that the product that I'm most proud of is the product that was the best feat of engineering was the Arcline. So I don't know if we can pull that up, but yeah, the you know, if you go to like that Arcline Chillum, for example, right there. So the Chillum, like everything everything about this product is custom tooled and custom extruded. You know, there's no other pipe company in the world that has done has started with a custom borosilicate glass extrusion and completely customized every tool involved in the manufacturing of the pipe. So in the entire family of these, there's the, every child of that family is customized. So there's, you know, a Chillum, a bubbler, a water, we have a hemisphere bubbler and a water pipe and a steamroller and a spoon. And every single one of them was custom extrusion. When I mean custom extrusion, I mean that borosilicate is similar to...
It's a special type of glass.
Borosilicate is very similar to metal when, you know, is the way it's made. There's like a giant bath of molten glass, and you know that's it's got tributaries that come off of the lake that fall through a an orifice that creates the size and shape of the tubing or the rods.
Okay.
So you know, so we went to, you know, we had to buy like container loads of our own custom extrusions in order to make this.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was like really, it was our biggest feat of engineering.
It's really rugged. I mean, borosilicate's great glass. We use it in the lab.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, it's
lab grade glass. Right. It's incredible. That's awesome. So, in the, you know, in the last couple of years, we've been, you know, talking and friends. You've come up with some new cool products. Are there some other products that are coming out or something that you're really proud of that's just been launched that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly in development. We go through development cycles. You know, it's funny. We get a lot of, you know, ideas that come through the pipeline. People are like, oh, I've got a great idea, call me. And you know, what people don't realize when it comes to, you know, product development is that, you know, we have a product development cycle that's 13 months. So from ideation to launch is a minimum of 13 months.
Wow.
So you know, so we've got to set these things up, you know, in, you know, far in advance. I toured the Nike factory recently, or the last couple of years, and Nike's design cycle is 5 years. So it's not like we're, you know, unique to this. A 13-month design cycle is fast.
Yeah.
But you know, as far as products that we're bringing to market, you know, I'm not allowed to pre-release these things. We've got big launch parties for them. But
maybe we'll be at one of those launch parties.
Right. You know, our most exciting stuff is our silicone initiative right now. You know, okay. Silicone pipes are a big deal right now, and you know, people are really concerned. I always say that the customer journey in a head shop often is mostly based on three components of price, coolness, and breakability. So, you know, a lot of people are, you know, coming in, hey, I've got $100. What's, you know, what should I buy? Coolness factor. And, you know,
I'm gonna keep it for a while.
Yeah. Is it going to break? So, you know, it's glass. It's going to break, people, if you drop it. You know, no such thing as glass that doesn't break. But the silicone initiative, we saw all these silicone pipes coming out, and you know, the silicone has kind of a boiling point of about 400 degrees. So, you know, when you put a flame too close to silicone, you are really getting dangerous with the things that you're burning and inhaling.
Yeah.
So we approached it and said, well, if it's breakability that people want, like, let's take a page out of these water bottles and sleeve our currently existing pipes, but in a way that keeps the silicone away from the mouthpiece. So,
it's a form factor and a comfort feel.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we've got, it's going to spoil a little bit of our launch, but like, we are skinning more and more of our pipes these days to, you know, to give that that added, you know, breakability factor that people are concerned about.
And also, I would imagine from a design standpoint, a little more customization, and more of a...
Well, it gives a little flair, right? Flare. Like, yeah. So, you know, if we got, you know, we can launch skins in multiple colors, you know, you can add them to your clear glass pipe, and now you've got some more character. But we really take great care in finding the right, you know, the silicone that's like, feels, you know, feels really good.
Yeah.
It's got the right, durability and durability is based on durometer. So like we went through a ton of silicone vendors before we found one that was like the right fit for us. Mm-hmm. And we've got great designers that have been that build all of the silicone sleeves out of clay and then fit them to our pipes. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible design process.
That's awesome. So trade shows, do you guys still attend trade shows and do stuff like that?
Oh, trade shows.
Because I was trying to say,
so many of them.
You might want to, there's a lot of people out there in the space. We've got a really great audience that's specific to the cannabis and hemp space.
Sure.
What are some of the best trade shows that you could say to probably attend and maybe see some of your team there?
So the head shop trade show, the biggest head shop trade show by far is the Champ Show. That happens a few times a year. The biggest one of the Champ Show happens in Vegas in this early spring. This year was end of February. Sometimes it's early February, but Champ Show is a big one for us. We're going to start going to MJ BizCon, although that hasn't been a big focus for us because it's kind of just a little bit too big.
It's huge.
And it's just hard to, dispensaries are pretty slow to onboard accessories,
okay.
Right? They've been really, primarily focused in the consumable side of the business. We're seeing a big shift to them, to dispensaries monetizing the rest of their real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're focusing on dispensaries and we feel like we've got a product offering in this, in our category that nobody else can match because,
sure.
We've got simple, repeatable products at a price point that makes sense. So again, trade shows are really tough because there's regional trade shows and there's national trade shows. Which ones do we need to be at? Where are we going to get the most bang for our buck? Because these trade shows take bandwidth and cash and everybody is short on, no matter how big you are.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. So what I'd like to do is invite you back anytime if we've got a new launch or a new product that you want to get out there that we'd love to show.
Sure.
I mean, we'd love to have you back. And brother, come here.
Thanks. Man. Appreciate it.
So good to see you, man.
Yeah,
thanks
you
for
too.
Everything, dude.
Appreciate it.
And Producer Braven, are we good?
I think we're good. That was fantastic, gentlemen. Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah.
I'll get a little sign up.
Yeah. Appreciate it. If you guys want to get any more, any more topics fit in, we can always, reconvene. And
I love David.
And
so
add
awesome.
To it.
This is so fun. I mean, first of all.
I know you can go on for hours.
Yeah,
literally, we could literally sit here for 2 hours.
Which is fine. Okay. So Braven, it was a great show. David just left. Dave Daly
cool
just
guy.
Left. What a great show. I mean,
he's very fit.
He's very fit. The guy's felt. And it's always nice to interview friends, and of course this industry's, as many of you know, the industry's really a close-knit family. We're getting more and more people that are entering the industry, which is great. But it's a very, very close-knit family, and it's always nice to have friends and family stop by.
I can't believe how much actual engineering he did in the beginning by himself.
It's,
that's crazy.
It's incredible.
It's like a garage. It's like Apple starting a garage.
Exactly.
He really just built that whole company from the ground up. That's
crazy. And there's the interesting thing is when you start a business, many people don't realize how long it takes to create that momentum and critical
right.
mass. There's so many things that have to come together, and it's really timing and a lot of luck, and you really have to learn quick. You have to have a really short learning curve in order to keep your momentum going. And I think it was really a couple of neat anecdotes that he shared
Me
with
too.
Us.
You never hear about actual cannabis companies starting like this because it's such a there's no press about it. But it's like,
and most people are talking about the cultivation side, the growers, which we're really looking forward to interviewing a lot of cultivators. Having them in here or interviewing them virtually or even going out and interviewing them at their location. We're going to be having a sub-series called Odd Leaf Stories in the Field, and we'll be going out to the locations. Yeah, literally the field, the greenhouse, the grow room, and the extraction labs. We're really looking forward to that and bringing the world of cannabis and hemp to you on whatever device you are looking at us on. Anyway, but thank you for joining us.
If you buy any Grav Labs products, just type that you saw them on this show.
Yeah. Props to us.
Yeah. Let them know that we said
spoken like a true producer. Anyway, well, Braven, I really appreciate it. And this is right now, this show, right this moment, is a true culmination of a lot of effort on your side, and I really
thank you, sir.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward. So, welcome, and please join us for this ongoing journey. We're going to introduce you to some wonderful people.
That's a wrap.
Woo!
Cheers. You've earned it.
All right,
and then we'll fade to black.
Is that going to be fun?
Then we're going to fade to black.